Caregiver here on American Family Radio. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is the program for you as a family caregiver. Healthy caregivers make better caregivers. How are you feeling today? How are you holding up? Do you feel healthy? If not, you're in the right place. Because my goal, my mission, my passion, my key objective is to leave you in better shape than I found you. And I believe that that will be accomplished today after this program. I have a spectacular guest starting in the next block that I think you're going to absolutely love and can't wait to get into a conversation with her about her journey. But in this brief moment we have at the beginning of the program, I want to go back to something that I put in my book, A Minute for Caregivers, when every day feels like Monday. And this is a little chapter I called Immeasurable Cost. This is Easter weekend, and this story is very dear to me. I called up a pastor friend of mine back in Nashville, my pastor for many years, Jim Bachman, and asked him how he was doing. And he was burying his dog. And, you know, our pets become family to us. And this was a big blow. And I could just picture him by himself with a shovel burying his dog in his backyard. We had to bury ours not too terribly long ago, and it was just a heartbreaking time. This was Gracie's support animal, and he's been with us for a long time. And so I shared his grief. And he said he wept. And he got actually quite angry while digging the hole. And he reflected on how much he hates death. The conversation turned to the funerals that he's presided over in his career as a pastor. Many, many, many funerals. He couldn't even count them all. And I played for a lot of those. He would call me up and say, you know, so-and-so has passed away and they've requested that you play. Would you be able to play for this? And I usually, if at all possible, try to play for every funeral that I'm asked to. I can't always do it, but I try to. I don't like to play for weddings, but I do try to play for funerals because that's the time I believe that as believers, we have the greatest opportunity to minister to people in their great grief. And he and I did this a lot. And those families we think about, I always had a front row view for the families. And just to be able to be with them and to play a song that they liked. And he was the same way. We cherished those times. And then he said something that never left me. And even though we were on the phone, I could just picture him stopping for a moment, leaning on his shovel. And he said, "I hate death, but do you know who hates death more?" I was just quiet. I was just listening. And he said, "God hates death." He went on to say he hates it so much that he took it upon himself to provide a way to defeat death. And that just stuck with me so much. I could just say, God hates death more than we do. And I can't help but think about when Jesus stood at Lazarus' grave. John 11:38. And it shares there that he was deeply moved. And some translations state that anger welled up in Jesus, anger at death. You know, we see the passage says Jesus wept. But according to scholars, from what I can understand, he was visibly upset about this. And he knew he was going to raise Lazarus from the dead. You know, that's always kind of puzzled me. I mean, he knew what he was about to do, but at the same time, he was very angry at death, evidently very emotional about it. mere weeks after standing at Lazarus' tomb. I mean, just weeks after this. On what we now celebrate as Easter Sunday, Jesus indeed conquered death, but at an immeasurable cost to himself. God hates death more than we do, and he conquered it at great cost to himself. And I'm reminded of that story in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, C.S. Lewis, The Chronicles of Narnia, and there's a place in the story where one of the four children, Edmund, had been co-opted and deceived and basically bought by the White Witch. And his soul was forfeit. And the White Witch knew this. And she challenged Aslan, the great lion, who's the Christ figure in this. You know, hey, look, I own him. You know the rules. I own him. And Lucy looked at Aslan and pled with him about her brother. She said, please, Aslan, can anything be done to save Edmund? And Aslan, the great lion, said to her very quietly, all shall be done, but it may be harder than you think. And Aslan sacrificed his life for Edmund. All shall be done, but it may be harder than you think. My friend Jim also said to me at another time that his heart grieves that too many pastors and too many people who sit in the pews have become bored with the gospel. May it never be so that we are bored with the great news of what God has done at great cost to himself. One of the toughest times in my life as a caregiver was on an Easter Sunday. Gracie was very, very, very sick. We lived only a few miles away from church. It was Covenant Presbyterian, there where the shooting happened a year ago. And I slipped away for a few moments just to go to Easter service. The place was packed. There was a full orchestra, full choir. I mean, it was everything you would want an Easter service to be. My sons were grown and they were away, and it was just me as a caregiver. And everybody's singing around me. But I felt so alone. I was in a massive church filled to the capacity with people with unbelievable music, and I felt isolated. I couldn't understand all the drama that was going on in my life. I couldn't process it. I'm grateful that God has walked me through that journey. Part of that was because of Jim and other pastors, Larry and so many others, who helped me understand the gospel in such a way that I will never experience that again, because I know that he is always there with me. There was an immeasurable cost that was paid. It was harder than I imagined, harder than I could think. But he hated death so much that this is what he did. May we never become bored with the great news of the gospel, that he who knew no sin took all of that on him and gave us his righteousness. That he was not only crucified, but he was raised. Not only raised, but he ascended, where he sits at the right hand of God the Father Almighty. And he prays for us. He intercedes for us. He advocates for us because he is our great priest. That is the gospel. Whatever is going on in your life this weekend as a caregiver, understand that one who loves you more than you can imagine paid an immeasurable cost for you. And that is Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. We'll be right back.
If you're 65 or older, you know this. Seeing your healthcare costs go up and up is frustrating. And maybe you were just notified that your Medicare costs are increasing again, or you're just tired of the massive deductibles. Well, here's some good news. There's a program that can really help with this. It's MediShare 65 Plus. It's an affordable, reliable alternative. You can choose any Medicare provider. You get telehealth access anytime you need it. And MediShare 65 Plus is a low-cost option for those with Medicare Parts A and B, and it fills in the gaps where Medicare stops. MediShare is a Christian healthcare community that aligns with your faith. People actually pray for you. They encourage you. And it's proven, too. It's been going strong for over 30 years now. So call now. You can get one low monthly price for up to 10 years. You're not stuck with increasing costs. You can do something about this today. Call MediShare 65 Plus. Find out how much you can save. Call 833-45-BIBLE. That's 833-45-BIBLE. 833-45-BIBLE.
Hey, man, what are you doing?
I'm just relaxing. I'm lying here in a shallow stream with my head downstream, letting the water run past me. Clears my mind. I call it streaming.
Okay, you know that word already has another meaning, right?
AFA Streaming offers free and subscription video content. Titles like By Design, The God Who Speaks, and Asbury Revival, Desperate for More. You'll also find video versions of AFR programs like The Hamilton Corner, At the Core, and Today's Issues. AFR programs are added every weekday, and other content is produced by American Family Studios, with more on the way. You can visit afa.net and click on Streaming, or you can find us on Roku. Video streaming on the AFA platform. And you don't even have to get wet.
Because he lives, I can face tomorrow. Because he lives,
all fear. Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is the program for you as a family caregiver. Healthy caregivers make better caregivers. I have a special guest with me today. She is an author, podcaster, and fellow caregiver. What struck me is that she is a pastor's wife.
Yes.
And being that I am the son of a pastor's wife, I was intrigued by her story. And so I want you to welcome Carol Leatham to the program. She is with the Caretaker's Journey, thecaretakersjourney.com. Carol, welcome to the program.
Thank
How are you feeling?
You know, it's a good day. As a caretaker, it's a good day.
Tell us a little bit about your story.
Well, I've been married for 47 years to my husband, who was a pastor until 8 years ago. And we served in multiple churches in California. And in 2015, he began to have some health issues. And the health issues escalated to where he needed to retire. But a pastor never really retires. So he retired one Sunday, and then the next week he started an interim position. And over the course of 2016, as he was working in this interim position, I started to notice a rise in his anxiety. He got to the point where he couldn't drive, and I had to be with him all the time. By the end of 2016, the anxiety had triggered some depression, and the depression became debilitating. In November of 2016, he made a call to a hotline, a crisis counselor hotline through our healthcare provider. And it led to him being taken. It led to me having to take him in the middle of the night to a high security facility for psychiatric patients. And in California, we have something called the 5150, which is the California Welfare Code. And they kicked me out of the hospital at 1 o'clock in the morning, told me, don't come back. We have him for 72 hours. We'll let you know. You have no rights anymore. And I left my pastor husband at this facility, walked out into the parking lot, and it was just overwhelming, is all I can say. And he had to retire. So he is now a retired pastor.
When you say they kicked you out, I mean, did they show any kind of compassion at all? Or did they say, look, we understand this is difficult, but you're going to have to leave? What was that like?
It was the only time he had been in a room on the phone with, he had made multiple calls to this hotline looking for help because he was becoming suicidal. And they brought the phone. He brought the phone to me. It was the only time I hadn't been in the room. So I, to this day, do not know what he said, Peter. But whatever he said triggered this chaotic mess where the woman is on the phone in almost a militant way. Tell me where you are. We're going to send the police. And what happened was he had been deemed a harm to himself and others. I convinced her finally to let me drive him to where they wanted to take him. And I did. It took me about 45 minutes to get there. We walked in and they seemed pretty encouraging at the beginning. They brought in a psychiatrist. The psychiatrist did a lot of evaluation, a lot of talking to him. It probably took about 3 hours and they would, I would say they were probably trying to talk to find out how serious he was about being suicidal. And as the time went on, they got less and less kind. At the point that they decided they were going to put him under the 72-hour hold, they asked me to step outside. And at that moment, I can look back now, even now, and I will get this like in my this like knot in my stomach from watching this take place. They handed me my purse because they had prisoners and some other dangerous people in this facility. An armed guard joined us in this group, and they literally said, "There's the door. Leave and don't come back. You can't call. We'll let you know where he is."
Well, that sounds consistent with California, but you know, I digress. I apologize.
That's okay.
That must have been a very terrifying thing for you. Mental illness is challenging enough, but you put it in the church context and it gets a bit weird. Is that a fair statement?
It gets more than weird, Peter. It gets terrifying. My kids and I agreed. I have adult children who are also in full-time ministry. And we agreed at the onset of this that we would not sort of be public about it. We agreed that we would kind of keep it within the family. But it was very quickly I realized I needed to quit his interim position. We needed to find some help. We were not home. I could not leave the county that we were in with him until he had completed some outpatient programs after he got out of the hospital. And what I discovered is that people in the church don't know how to deal with this. I saw people walk away from us in the church. I saw people ask me the same questions over and over. How could this happen to him? How could this happen to him? He was such a strong pastor and people just did not know how to deal with it. And so I was floored. And even today, I find myself speechless when I start to think about the people who were being in a public setting. A few months later, we were in a public setting and I was doing something for a large group of our denomination. And I watched two men walk in a door. And these are men who, had they seen us a year before, would have come over, given us hugs. We would have stood around and chatted. And I watched them walk through the door, look at us, say something to each other and point. And then I watched them turn around and walk back out the door. It was heartbreaking.
That's why I wanted to have you on this program, because I think that if we as believers do not have these discussions, but how many more Carols are out there that are falling apart?
There's a lot of us. And I will tell you that there were some incredible people. I actually wrote a book that came out in January of 2023. And God challenged me to be very transparent about this journey. And so I sort of talk in there about the pastor who sent me a blog about the pressures of being Job's wife. 2 weeks after my husband came home from the hospital, I read it. I was so stunned that he had sent this to me and really didn't understand it. So I sent the blog to a friend of mine who was one of my confidants. And I said, I need help because I cannot believe that somebody would think that this was me. She stopped everything and read the blog and she came back and this is what she said. Either this person did not read the blog or this person does not know you. Delete it, and don't ever speak to that person again. Because it was painful. It was just painful that this was going to be my new normal. And I had speaking engagements cancel because now somehow his mental instability just—
It's contagious.
Yes.
It's contagious.
And it was—
Now, I mean, normally I would say mental illness is contagious when I look at Washington, D.C. I would say that normally. That's more environmental, I think. You're sitting there grasping for straws. And instead of standing with you and just grieving with you, just sitting with you, because they obviously didn't understand the book of Job in the first place, this person.
Absolutely.
Because Job 2:13, they sat with him silent 7 days because they saw his suffering was great.
Yes.
We don't know how to sit silent for 7 minutes with people who suffer, and that your whole world has been turned upside down. There's a term referred to people who are in the media in this country called drive-by journalists.
Yes.
Where they just basically lower the window, see what's going on, make a prompt reporting and move on. They do not stop and look and see what's going on. And I think that we can apply that here where there's drive-by ministerial whatever. The whole point of minister is to serve.
Absolutely.
To serve. And here you are, your world was rocked. Your husband is in lockdown and then going through the aftermath of all that, the stigma and everything.
I do want to say there was a couple that God brought into our life, brought into my life. And I talk about this in great detail in my book. This couple, they were pastor. He was a pastor and he found out he was in the area where we were at. We were not at home. We were in another county, about 4 hours away from where we live when all of this came down. And this couple found out, called me. She went with me. His wife went with me the very first time to the second.
They didn't know you prior.
No, we knew each other from ministry, but we did. I would not say that we had a deep friendship. I would say we just casually had been in ministry in California. When they found out, they said, no, you're not going to go through this by yourself. And this one couple just took it upon themselves to walk through some of the darkest, darkest days. There was another couple who are also ministers, who she and I had been friends for over 20 years. And when this all came out, she said, you know, I'm a retired nurse. And I said, yes, what you don't know is I'm a retired psychiatric nurse. So God had put my best friend in my life 20 years before, knowing that I was going to need her. So there were individuals that were there that would step up. But this one couple, we ended up living with them for 4 weeks while my husband was completing his outpatient program. They just kind of wrapped me in this warm, like protective covering. It was beautiful, but that was not the norm. And while we were not home, I actually took him to a church. And here's what we did go to a church shortly after he was out of the hospital. We were not home. I'm not going to say where we were or what the church was. But the pastor's preaching along, we're sitting on the back pew, and in the middle of his sermon, he says, you know what? I need to stop for a second. I don't know what's going on, but I need to stop for a second. And if there's anybody in here who's struggling, he didn't know we were there. We didn't know him. He didn't know us. He said, but if you're struggling with depression this morning, you need to get off your meds and get on your knees because that is all you need. And I'm sitting there, Peter, I'm sitting there with this man who we cannot find medication to keep the suicide at bay. I'm overwhelmed that this person would even, I mean, it didn't have anything to do with his sermon. I don't even know why he would stop and say that. But
I got to ask you, by any chance, it may not be this case, but by any chance, did that pastor wear glasses?
I don't remember.
Because if he did, he needs to throw his glasses down because he doesn't need glasses anymore. You know, I got a chapter in one of my books called Why Do Faith Healers Wear Glasses?
Yes.
And if you'll notice, by the way, when you go to these big crusades and all these people are getting slain in the spirit and all these kinds of things, they're getting all excited about stuff. The cameraman never gets slain in the spirit. Did you ever notice that? These are things that make me scratch my head and say, what's this all about? Yeah. And when guys like that pronounce that and they wear glasses. I'm just like, I got nothing for you, buddy. I got nothing. You need to stop what you're doing. We're talking with Carol Leatham, got a book out called Are You Ready to Find Joy When Life Gets Messy? Which I love the title. She's talking more about her journey with her husband through mental illness. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is Hope for the Caregiver, hopeforthecaregiver.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Jesus spent his days teaching from God's word, healing the sick, and loving the marginalized. So how does a perfect and sinless man end up beaten, mocked, and condemned to die a criminal's death? This week on Pathway to Victory, Dr. Robert Jeffress walks through the final hours leading up to the death of Jesus. Join us for the series, The Power of the Cross, this week on Pathway to Victory.
Weekday mornings at 6 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Jan Markell. Next on Understanding the Times Radio, I talked to Pastor Billy Crone about the current craze phenomenon, UFOs. Will these be the excuse for millions who will become missing due to the rapture of believers? UFOs are now more popular than God. Sad to say. That's next on Understanding the Times Radio.
Saturday afternoon at 1 Central and Sunday afternoon at noon Central on American Family Radio.
Pastor Robert Jeffress.
Jesus said, you are the salt of the earth, you are the light of the world. Imagine a giant dam that is in danger of collapsing, crumbling, and there's a village below filled with people who are in danger of being flooded. And a group of concerned townspeople go up and they push up against that dam. And they know ultimately their effort is futile. Ultimately that dam is going to burst. And that's really what we Christians are trying to do. We're not going to save this culture. We're not going to prevent its ultimate collapse, but we're to push back against evil for as long as we can to give people an opportunity to hear the life-changing gospel of Jesus Christ. We're to be a preservative, pushing back against evil, but at the same time, we're to be sharing the light of Jesus Christ. And I believe we're to get involved and not get in our spiritual silos and wait for the end to come.
A reminder from American Family Radio.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger, hopeforthecaregiver.com. Healthy caregivers make better caregivers. We're talking with Carol Leatham and her journey of caring for her husband with significant mental health challenges, including suicidal thoughts. Pretty graphic journey that they've had to go through, and what has happened in their journey with, sadly, other Christians in this. And so we wanted to take some time to give her an opportunity to share a story and hopefully be an encouragement to you all. I know she will be. Encourage you to, for those of you who are struggling with somebody with mental illness, that the stigma of this keeps too many people from the Christian ministry that our churches are called upon to give. That's got to stop.
Yes.
And so, Carol, thank you for being with us here. So you go to this church, this guy that you don't know stops in the pulpit and tells people to get off depression meds. You're over there just thunderstruck. And, you know, what's next?
Well, we came home and I ended up taking him to a private clinic here in California. And we finally did find some medication that calmed the suicidal ideation down. And we sort of fell into this routine, but it was a very isolated routine and trying to figure out, you know, what to do. Now, God had worked it out prior to this that we would end up buying a home and living with our kids. So I live with our daughter and her family. And so we were never totally isolated, but it was just such a devastating change, immediate change to our life. And God led me to write the book in June of 2020. And I wrote it at first because I thought, well, this will be a cathartic healing for me to just put down on papers how chaotic my life has become. And so I did. And then God challenged me through just some people that I knew that I needed to publish it. So it came out in January of 2023. And it won an award for a memoir of the year from this one book writing competition, or it was the second runner up or something. But what I discovered is that there's so many people out there like me that are living this day-to-day life. And so God has challenged me to begin to just start these difficult conversations about what mental health looks like. And it looks like your neighbor. It looks like the person you see in the grocery store. And when the book was getting ready to come out, I went to my husband and I said, I will not publish this unless you agree, because it's raw, it's transparent, it's mouthy, it's sassy, it's exactly who I am. And I'm not going to sugarcoat this journey. And so he read it and we got to the end of him reading it and we had a conversation. And this is what he said. He said, the only thing that bothers me is the stigma of mental health. I have a mental illness. People keep saying I'm mentally ill. And I said, well, if you had cancer, if you had a heart attack, if you had to take medication, if you had any other illness, is there any other illness that would cause you to have this sort of feeling? And he said, no. And I said, babe, you have an illness that needs to be treated. And then he said to me these words, publish the story. Help other people, tell them how they can love somebody who struggles like me. And then he wrote the foreword. So from the moment you read my book, you know that he is aware of everything I say in the book.
That's very brave of both of you. And it takes that level of courage to help people redirect their eyes on this, because the gospel is not limited to physical afflictions.
Amen.
The gospel is not limited to financial issues. The gospel permeates into all the diseases and affliction. He says, I've come to, you know, heal all thy diseases. And you know, some of these things are not going to be resolved on this side of heaven. We know that. But at the same time, he gives us grace and strength to endure and to see him in it. He, one of the things I love, and a pastor friend of mine shared this with me, whatever we're going through, he's already there waiting for us in that.
Absolutely.
He's prepared to meet us there.
I cannot tell you how many times I will go to God and I will say, I have an ongoing conversation with him throughout the day. And I began to have my husband's mental illness manifested itself as if it couldn't get any worse in anger and blame towards me. And so there were some years where it was very, very difficult. And I contacted several counselors and saying, I just need you to help me get married. And they'd give me a marriage book. And I'm like, you don't understand. This isn't your normal marriage. I'm not, you know, this is not going to work for us. I said, what I need. And I finally landed on with a counselor. And I can still remember, he said, tell me what your outcome, what is the outcome that you're trying to do? And I said, well, I made a vow before God to love and honor this man. And I said, and you've seen, we've talked about the things that are going on and the anger and the blame that I'm dealing with. I said, I need you to help me process and find coping mechanisms. Well, God began to just give me just incredible. I figured out my own, because there was nothing out there. And so I created my own coping mechanisms. And then one day my friend said to me, why are you still looking for help? Because you have figured out so many things you need to help other people. So that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book. It's one of the reasons why I've started the podcast and the ministry. It's so critical that we as caretakers, especially those of us who are living with mental health issues, you know, loved ones that have mental health issues, the divorce rate goes like 9 out of 10 when depression is a part of the mix. And I just believe that it is possible for you to continue to love someone even when their brain is taken over by anxiety and depression and suicidal ideation. And is it easy? Absolutely not.
What is one of the techniques that you use to cope with this?
Okay. Well, one day it was a particularly rough day and I had to walk out of the room because the anger and the blame was so incredibly intense. And I remember I walked into the garage and I was standing in the garage screaming at God. If you were a neighbor walking down the street, you were probably wondering what the heck was going on, because I was saying to God, what the heck? How am I going to survive? I mean, just yelling and just venting. And I took a breath and I looked over, and on the workbench was a roll of blue tape and a measuring tape. So I grabbed them and I'm talking to God the whole time, telling him how mad I am and how this isn't fair. And I was throwing an epic temper tantrum.
I'm surprised God had time for you that day, because I was doing the same thing probably that day for myself.
So I measured out a 3 foot by 3 foot square and taped it off in this blue tape. And then I stood there and I pointed at the box and I'm yelling at God saying, do you see this blue? Do you see this box? I'm like, it's epic. I mean, it is like, it was one of my finest moments. Do you see this box? I'm going to step in this box. And then we're going to have to deal with this mess. And so I stepped into the box. I literally physically stepped into the box and I screamed at God and I said, do you see this? This is all I can handle. This is it. I said, you are now responsible for everything else in the world, because this is my box and I am only dealing with this stuff. And I took a breath and I heard the Holy Spirit very gently from inside say to me, it's about time.
Yeah.
You have to let go of him. You have to love him and let me deal with it. You cannot fix this. You cannot change this. You cannot stop this. You cannot solve this. You have to.
I get that. I was asked one time in an interview, what's the biggest challenge you've ever faced as a caregiver? And I said, hands down, knowing what is mine and what is not mine. And I need to borrow your box. So when you're done with it, just ship it back here to Montana. Because I think we all need that box to understand our abilities are very limited. We did not cause this. We cannot change it. A friend gave me a piece of advice. And he said to me, Gracie has a savior. You ain't that savior.
Amen.
Does that resonate with you?
Amen. That is so true. And when I finally said, God said to me, you need to trust me that I am holding him in the palm of my hand and let go. Which leads me to another technique, which is there are times where I just have to literally put my hands up in the air. I'm giving you him. And then I have to turn my hands over and say, you have to deal with it. And sometimes I have to do it more than once or twice, because
sometimes I have to do it more than once or twice an hour.
Well, I didn't say it was once or twice a minute, but you know, I'm a very creative visual person. And so what I have discovered is through this journey, God has given me some very real moments where I can stop and realize that I'm not in control. I'm not the boss of me. I'm not the boss of him. I'm not the boss of anybody, really.
We're not. We're talking with Carol Etham. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is Hope for the Caregiver. Her book is called, Are You Ready to Find Joy When Life Gets Messy? How I'm Surviving My Husband's Struggle with Anxiety, Depression, and Suicidal Thoughts. We got more to go when we come back. This is Hope for the Caregiver. Don't go away. We'll be right back. I'll never forget walking into the hospital room after Gracie had her second amputation. Both legs are gone now. And she looked at me. She said, I know what I'm going to do. And I was kind of startled. I said, well, what are you going to do? She said, I'm going to help provide prosthetic limbs to my fellow amputees and tell them about Jesus. And I said, well, baby, can we get out of the hospital first? But she never let it go. And for almost 20 years, we've been working out of Ghana, West Africa. We treat patients all over there from other countries that come there. We send supplies. We send teams. We sponsor patients. We work with a prison where inmates volunteer to disassemble used prosthetic limbs so we can recycle the parts. All of this because Gracie trusted God with her heartache. We've got a huge shipment of supplies that is being loaded up right now to go out soon. Would you help us do it? StandingWithHope.com/giving. StandingWithHope.com/giving. There's prosthetic feet, knees, pylons, sleeves, adapters, all kinds of connectors. All of these things we are sending over there so that people can walk. We're going to point them to Christ. Help us out. StandingWithHope.com/giving.
Here's Pastor Erwin Lutzer from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
You know, so often I see, even in evangelical circles, where you have a great deal of emphasis on human wisdom. Now, that human wisdom sometimes is right. For example, human wisdom can diagnose certain problems that people have psychologically and so forth. The problem is, human wisdom does not have an answer to the deep needs of the soul. What we need to do is to get back to the Bible. Do we begin to think in human terms as to how problems can be solved? Or do we come to God seeking His wisdom so that the answers that we have for human need and human conflict are truly biblical?
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is the program for you as a family caregiver. Healthy caregivers make better caregiver. Carol Leatham is with us. She's talking about her new book, Are You Ready to Find Joy When Life Gets Messy? She's talking about her journey with her husband through his mental illness and the impact on her and what this has meant to her as a pastor's wife, as somebody who is hopelessly outgunned by an affliction that is way beyond her skill set, my skill set, your skill sets. This is way beyond the pale here. Mm-hmm. And I love the picture of you just stepping into a 3x3 box with blue tape and recognizing that your abilities are so limited to just your own thoughts, your own words, your own deeds, mm-hmm. and that God's got this. But that's one of the hardest things for me is to recognize He's got this. And I heard a friend of mine the other day dealing with his wife with Alzheimer's, and I shared this on the program a couple of weeks ago. He said something that really just struck me, and I just loved it because his wife just kept peppering him with the same question over and over and over, just repeatedly. And finally, he took a deep breath, and he said to himself, he's got this. Just answer her question.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that simple act of faith,
mm-hmm.
how did that change for you where you were able to put this confidence back squarely into God's hand that, okay, He does have this?
I think there's two answers. The first answer is, the practical first answer is, I had already been building a foundation in my relationship with Him from the time I was 16. And I talk about that in the book, about how I came to the Lord at 16 and I came out of this just chaotic lifestyle. And I just knew so clearly at that day that God had a plan for my life. Now, I will tell you, when this whole thing came down and I found myself the caregiver of somebody who doesn't even want to live and is angry at me, God and I were having all kinds of conversations about And I remember one time I was really angry, because anger is a part of it. And we have to tap into those personalities and the feelings and the emotions that we're dealing with. If we keep stuffing them down and trying to go on, then we get what is called caregiver's burnout, which makes us as helpless as the loved one we're trying to care for. And I remember I got mad one day and I said to God, "You're not doing a very good job." I'm like, "You're terrible at this. You're not doing a very good job." And all of a sudden, I was driving in my car and a song came on. And these same two songs, almost every single time something would happen and my husband would be ranting or I would be ranting, like this day, one of these two songs came on. And this song came on and it said, basically the message of the song is, "I'm going to trust you even if you don't change this. Even if you don't change this, I'm going to trust you. I'm going to believe." And so I began to go, okay, like your friend who had the same question, I had to develop a technique when my husband would be getting angry and he would just be spewing all of these, what I knew were not truths. And I knew that in the core of who he was, he didn't believe, but because his mind has been taken over by this mental health issue, this anxiety, depression, I learned how to listen, but not hear. I learned how to listen to what he's saying, but not hear. And the way I did it would be that I would take my hands and I would place them face up on my lap, because it's not a natural feeling. So if you, and I can imagine all your listeners, everybody are going to try this right now. If you take your hands and you put them face up with your palms up on your lap, it does not feel comfortable. It feels really comfortable to put them palms down, but to put your hands face up on your lap. And I did that one day, and I imagined his angry words going in my ear so that I could hear what he was saying or listen to what he was saying. But then I imagined they'd go down my arm, and then these angry little speech bubbles would come up out of my palms, because I'm not letting it into my brain so I remember it. I'm not letting it into my heart so it hurts me. I'm letting him get out whatever he needs to get out. If it's a repetition of a question, because there's in Alzheimer's, they ask the same question. And what happened was it took the stress out of my life, because I'm listening, but I'm not hearing. I'm not absorbing. I'm not, so what if we're answering the question five times? What's the problem with that? It might be feel irritating for me, but if I answer the question five times, I'm loving and honoring and ministering to my loved one who has this disease.
I really do appreciate that. And those are things I think that are going to resonate deeply with listeners here who are struggling with somebody in their family who has mental illness. One of the things I set out to do when I started talking to fellow caregivers was to incorporate every part of the caregiver's journey that somebody are dealing with. So many times people just think it's dealing with nursing homes. Mm. Gracie's never been in a nursing home. I've been a caregiver for her since I was 22.
Wow.
And so that's not a part of our life. Your life dealing with mental illness, and there's somebody out there dealing with alcoholism or addiction. Anytime there's a chronic impairment, there's a caregiver. And my challenge to myself and to others, and particularly those in ministry, is be prepared to walk softly into those places. Mm-hmm. Don't barge in and wield your Bible like it's a cudgel and just start smacking people around. Mm-hmm. Understand that there's great trauma here, and let's go in boldly, but with great humility, recognizing that none of us have the power to change anything. I have met a lot of people in my life. And not one of them has had the ability to grow Gracie's legs back or fix her broken body. Our needs are so much greater than we could possibly imagine. And the gospel speaks to those, whether it's mental illness, whether it's broken bodies, whether it's addiction, whether it's whatever, it doesn't matter. He is greater than all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the one who heals all our diseases, and he'll do it in his time.
Yes.
And the question is, are we going to accept his invitation to trust him?
Absolutely.
And you have.
Yes. And I think another practical thing that has really helped me is I realized early on that I was walking through a time of grief. And the grief is, accepting that what my life used to look like is never going to look like that again. I'm still a pastor's wife, but I'm a pastor's wife now trying to learn to live on this side of the pew. And I'm in a church now with a lot of pastor's wives. And when they have a pastor's wife's gathering, I'm not one. And when my friends who are pastor's wives in the state of California get together and I go and I'm with them, it feels different because we didn't just retire. We didn't just go off into retirement and now I can go back and, you know, be a part of the group. It was almost like I'm not a part of the group anymore.
Because you were sitting outside the camp.
Yes. And that's what I was going to just say. I just finished reading through the Old Testament and it really feels like you have leprosy and you're put outside of the camp because we don't know what to do. We don't know how to deal with you. And then, of course, because I became so vocal about my journey, it does make people uncomfortable because I'm willing to just say, yeah, it's not fun. And yeah, this is what happens. And unfortunately for my husband, now we've gotten some stability with his mental problems, but now he's developing some health issues. So he's had 6 major surgeries in the last 6 months. And I'm really investigating the correlation between the mental and the physical, because now he's had hip replacement. Now he's got spine issues. Now he's lost his gallbladder. Now he's lost his appendix. You know, what is going on? How is this intertwined? And that's one of the things I have a person coming up on my podcast. We're going to talk about that.
I want you to bring some of that information back.
Okay.
To us on this. And I imagine that may be in your next book as well.
It is.
You know, I'm thinking about what you said. This is Easter weekend. Mm. We have one who was sent outside the camp on our behalf.
Yes.
And all of this, as believers, we can rest confident knowing that all of this was laid on him and he was sent outside the camp. It was imputed to him and his perfect life was imputed to us. That great exchange. And so in those moments when listeners as an audience is when you're feeling like that you've been sent outside the camp, you're talking to someone who really understands that with Carol. She gets that. Mm-hmm. And yet she was able to see that God waited for her there as well. And he's waiting for you. He's already done that. He's already been outside the camp and bore all of this for us. And we can rest in that. Carol, you've given us a great gift today by just bringing this to attention. We're going to have you back on.
I'd love that.
And I want you to explore that a little bit more with health and mental, physical health and mental health, and then just touch base with me and let's come back on and talk about this some more because this is not going to go away. Mental illness is gripping our society on so many levels and it's permeated all the way down now to our children. And we have children that are being horribly treated because of mental illness, either in their parents or in themselves or whatever. This is not going to go away. And yours is a voice that needs to be heard. And so I'm very grateful that you took the time. I want you to go out to her website, The Caretaker's Journey, The Caretaker's Journey. She has a couple of websites. Sorry about that earlier, but thecaretakersjourney.com. And you can see a little bit more about Carol Leatham and her book. I want you to pick it up. If you know somebody who's struggling with this, I want you to pick up 2 copies and send that to them so that they can know that they're not alone. Isolation is one of the most crippling things that can happen to us as human beings. And disease and affliction comes with enough isolation. Mental illness brings its own stigma and isolation. Let's see if we can't push back on that. So, Carol, thank you again for being a part of the program.
Thank you so much, Peter.
This is Peter Rosenberger. This is Hope for the Caregiver, hopeforthecaregiver.com. We'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.